And welcome again to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, and co-hosting today will be Mike Gregg and David Holly. This is another episode of the FFC Weekly Roundup, and in this episode, we're going to be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Reading. However, we will start the show by discussing some transfer speculation and then answering your questions you sent us on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. We have much to discuss. Before we do anything, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show. First, Mr. Holly, how you doing?
Hi, Russ. Hi, Mike. I hope you've had a good Christmas and everything, and obviously topped off by a fine win against Ipswich away.
Yes, very fine win. Very good point there, David. I'm really enjoying the holiday season, and boy, Monday was a good day for Fulham Football Club. Very good day. I'm glad that you mentioned that. Mike, over to you. How are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing well, Russ. Hi, David. I hope you both had good Christmas, and all the listeners as well. And yeah, it's been a really good week off. It's meant to be a holiday, but it just seems to be busy every day. But yeah, looking forward to tonight's show and the game tomorrow, of course.
Yeah, very much looking forward to the match tomorrow. Big match. You and I were already talking about that, Mike, and we'll be going through that in a little bit. But before we do that, we have some transfer speculation that I want to start with. And Mike, I'm going to start with you. The Sun are reporting that Ipswich Town are interested in Collie Woodrow for a 6-month loan. What are your thoughts on this speculation?
Well, I think it's been clear Woodrow hasn't even been in a match day squad for a good couple of months. So he was going to always go in January somewhere, whether it's on loan or permanent. But I mean, we've got him on a long contract. He's still only 22, so. A loan's probably the best thing for us. Lets him go in the shop window, get maybe some confidence playing somewhere. I mean, if it's Ipswich, I don't know if that's great. They're in a bit of turmoil after, we beat them the other day. Fans aren't happy, and there's a good chance, who knows, Mick McCarthy might get the sack. So if Woodrow goes there, McCarthy gets the sack, you're stuck with a new manager coming in. Are you in your plan? So I don't know if Ipswich is the best choice for him. For me, he should go down to League One, get some confidence, get some goals, because, I'm not convinced at Championship level he's good enough anyway. So, but he needs to go out and, it'd be best for him and best for the club, really.
Very good there, Mike. And I agree with you. He needs to go all alone. I thought your take here was very interesting, talking about League One and maybe Ipswich Town isn't the right fit. David, what are your thoughts about this, about Collie Woodrow, and also what Mike just shared there?
No, I have to completely agree with Mike, really, on that one. I wouldn't think that Ipswich was a good fit for Collie. No one, I think, really at Fulham thinks that Collie is good enough for regular sort of Championship appearances. I think it's, at the real top end of his game to expect him to be a regular in the Championship. I think his place is probably in League One or even League Two. Let's remember, I know he was younger and less experienced, but he didn't exactly set the world alight when he was at Southend in League Two. So I'm surprised that Ipswich are interested, really, because Ipswich, obviously they've got a few issues. They didn't have a shot on target against us. So they have issues with probably all over the pitch, but scoring goals. So Collie isn't really the solution to that I see. So I think we all know that Corley's probably on his way out, either on loan or perhaps permanently. But, I'm surprised that it would be Ipswich, because Ipswich, they need something. I have a good friend of mine who's an Ipswich Town fan, and I spoke to him after the match. And he said that the only thing that was more funny than Ipswich's woeful play was our woeful finishing. And had we been any good at finishing, it would have been 10-0. And I think it was kind of what you call a backhanded compliment.
Yeah.
Because it's another of those kind of Reading kind of matches at home that Mike was talking about, where the opposition looked very poor. And is it because they're poor, or is it because we made them look poor? I think it's a bit of both in this case. I think, it was all set up to be an absolute classic Fulham performance, really. Dominate the first half, go in 1-0 up at half time, and then let it grasp, slip through your grasp and everything, and that's been our problem. But to their credit, we didn't let it slip through our grasp, maybe because Ipswich was so poor, maybe it was because of our play, but we should have banged more in. We should have made that match safe. We really should have done. But at least it's a step in the right direction. You know, we held on to the points and we won the match. And, you know, we've got a great record away from home overall. If we could just get our home record a little bit better, you know, and, you know, I'm just going slightly off the topic here, but, you know, Mike's obviously been talking about, you know, how many points and how consistent we need to be. And we have to be, as I think Mike said, the third best team in the division for the rest of the season to make the playoffs, based on averages, of course. And, you know, we've got two matches coming up now, one that can make a big difference to our own fate. Two teams who are just above us. Obviously, Brighton are a little bit more above us, but two teams who are nevertheless are above us that we need to get points against. So for Cawley, I'd be very surprised if he went to Ipswich. I think he'd have to be on the short list of Mick McCarthy if he's still there for the sending the white coats round. We could get Yanis on to do his Mick McCarthy impression, and we could sort of simulate the transfer negotiation, perhaps.
He actually did that in the last show, David. He actually did a very good Mick McCarthy. Very interesting take there from both of you on Cawley Woodrow. I definitely think he should go out on loan, and I do wish him the best. I think Mike has a very good point, though. I do think eventually he is a League One striker, and that might be where he ultimately ends up, but I think that he should go on alone. I agree, though, with you, Mike. I don't know if Ipswich Town is the right place for him, but we'll see if anything comes of that. All right, Mike, I'm going to go right back to you. According to the Daily Mail, Fulham are interested in centre-back Rob Kiernan from Glasgow Rangers. Now, I've seen a decent amount of speculation on this player. I don't know that much about him. He is a centre back. What are your thoughts about Fulham being linked to a centre back?
Well, I mean, it's one of those positions that, you know, we seem to think we have problems. Everyone's panicking because Callis was injured, and who of the three that remaining players are going to be on the pitch at the start of the game, and in the end, all three of them were on the pitch at the end. So, you know, I mean, we have a good team. We are getting results. We're not quite there to be challenging in that third best team. I don't think we're there yet. And you should always be looking to improve. Now, I must admit, I don't know much about Rob Kiernan. And, you know, looking at his history, I mean, for a 25-year-old, he hasn't played that many games and been on loan to about 10 clubs as well. So I don't know. But as someone said on Twitter the other day, you know, many of us questioned some of the players from last summer, and also some of the players when they've only played half an hour's game. So I think we have to trust the club on this. If they think this player's what they want, then you know, they need to go out and get them. And let's talk about you know, Ream possibly leaving, isn't there? So centre back is a position we may need to strengthen. Whether he's the right one, I don't know. But, you know, if he turns up, we're supporting. You know, you've only got to look at Malone. David would have probably said that. You know, there's a player who Cardiff fans couldn't wait to get to us. And he's proved, you know, quite key to the team and the way
Absolutely.
We play, really.
Absolutely. And that's why you never know. Sometimes it's a good point. Maybe you just need to trust the judgment of the club that they know what they're doing and that they're bringing in a player that's going to fit to what they want to do. It's a very good point. David, over to you. I'm going to give you one other piece of speculation, then we're going to talk about the transfer window in general. According to Heroes of City, Fulham are among several clubs interested in Nuha Dicko from Wolves. And I have to tell you, I would love to see Dicko here. I don't see it happening. But what are your thoughts about this player being linked to Fulham?
Well, I'm kind of, my curiosity would always be when we're linked with a player is, where would they fit in? How would they fit in? How would they fit into what we're already doing?
Right.
Obviously, we've identified that, you know, that centre-backs and things like that, we have a perceived weakness there. Goalkeeper, maybe. Strike, I think everybody would agree on that, what we talked about in the previous show. But Dicko, he's a forward, isn't he? Or a wide
yes.
forward.
Yep.
So I don't really see him, you know, being that different to what we have at the moment. Because, you know, the people that we have got in there have become very integral in our recent success. You know, people like IET, people like Aluku, and the way we're playing. So I think he kind of, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, he kind of plays in that sort of role, doesn't he? Or does he play more as a centre striker?
I believe he does play in the role that you were just describing, David.
So, you know,
against us, he played up on his own, really. And he impressed me a lot. So if we are interested in him, I wouldn't be unhappy with that.
Okay. I was just about to ask you, Mike.
Thanks for the clarification. So in that respect, as a replacement, an alternative to Chris Martin, then yes, that's more viable because we do need someone there who can, shake things up a bit, keep Chris Martin on his toes. If Chris Martin can't play, if he's injured, suspended or whatever, who can slot straight in and do a similar role because, you know, we did lack that a little bit, obviously, against Derby. And much as the guys worked hard, I don't think for me it wasn't Aiti's best position to be up there or none of the other ones, to be honest with you. So, but the trouble is, if we did sign Dicko, I don't see him getting game time. Or if he does, obviously, then someone else is not going to get game time, whether that's Martin or somebody else. But, you know, the speculation says we're going to exercise the option on Martin's loan deal and take him. So would we be looking to buy someone else who would play there or who wouldn't necessarily be a starter? I don't know. But you saw him at Wolves, Mike. So and I know in the past he has been a dangerous player. I think I seem to remember him coming off the bench as a sort of super sub role. So unless that's, of course, what Slavica has in mind for him, a super sub sort of come replacement if needed.
Over to you, Mike.
I don't see him as a natural sort of replacement for Martin, but he would give us something different, would give us some pace and a bit more mobility. It's an interesting one. My only concern with him is the same with the Scott, whose name's just completely disappeared from my head, the Brentford striker, is that he had an injury about a year ago. I know he's played. Yeah, so Hogan did his ligaments and so did Dicko about a year ago. So as long as they pass the medicals, you know, I suppose that's fine. But yeah, I mean, I would see him as a sort of super sub or, you know, that kind of role for us if we were to get him for the rest of the season. And the thing is, he's probably more amenable to come to Fulham, who are challenging for promotion, and sit on the bench than rather, you know, battle away with Wolves, who are, you know, going to be lucky to finish, you know, in the top half at all.
Okay, very good there. Very interesting talk about the transfer speculation. Like I mentioned, it is opening up very soon. And guys, I'm going to go right to a question from the Cottage Talk Facebook page because it really goes along with our talk about the January transfer window because I just want to get your thoughts overall. When I was talking to Giannis on the last show, he was talking about that he hopes that Savica is targeting upgrades, you know, players that could potentially be better than what we already have. So that's very interesting that he's thinking that, you know, we're not bringing in squad players. We'd bring in players that would offer something that we don't already have. I want to get your thoughts on that. Before I go to Roger's question, it's Roger Lewis who I'll be giving you a question first. Mike, over to you. Do you see Savica targeting players that would be either upgrades or something that we don't already have?
Well, first of all, I mean, let's remember, we signed 14 players last summer and there's still a couple of them who haven't broken into even the match day squad. So you're always looking to improve. Now, whether that's just the squad or the starting 11, who knows? I would be really surprised if apart from the centre-back position, the other players who came in were nothing more than possible replacements or squad players. I can't see us pushing the boat out, unfortunately, on first team starters, unless they're an exceptional centre back. Because the team works with Martin. Who are you going to replace in midfield? I suppose the other position, maybe goalkeeper. But again, I can't see us, you know, looking to spend a lot of money there and replace Button because he's kept faith with him.
Okay, very good there, Mike. Before I go to David, I'm going to give you Roger's question, and then David, I'll give you both a question and the topic that we're talking about here. Here's Roger's question. If we are unable to sign the quality of players identified by Slavica, how disappointed would you be, Mike?
Well, we won't know who he's identified, will we? I mean, this is the thing. I know where Roger's coming from because I know he's one of these who's not keen on the stats and Klein and that kind of stuff. But we just won't know, will we? I mean, we have a system in place at the club where scouts recommend players, managers recommend players, and the stats team recommend players. So, and they have to pass, the stats and the scouts regime. But I think we can have quite a long discussion, and I don't want to do it. But the fact is, the position we're in, do you gamble a lot of money and throw it to try and make the top six? Or do you see, is this still a... Do we just bob along trying to get in the top six? And if it doesn't work, then you push it in the summer. Because you could gamble a lot of money in January. And I'm seeing people say, we should spend. But if it doesn't work and we don't make the playoffs, and it's a very, very tough season, that top six, I mean, you're looking at Leeds winning as we speak, I think. And, the 40 points that is sixth place at the moment, that's the highest halfway season total that I can find. So, this is a year where getting in that top six is bloody hard, and we're 4 points behind even as we speak. So I don't know. I mean, if I was in charge, I'm not sure I would throw a lot of money at it because it's going to be such a tough challenge to get in that top six.
That's a very interesting topic there, Mike, that you just threw on the table here. And David, I want to get your thoughts about what Mike is actually proposing. What do you do in January? Do you go for it? Do you throw a lot of money in there? Or do you, like he said, bob along? Along with that, thoughts on what Roger shared and also my overall topic of what we should be expecting in January. Should we be expecting players that are just going to be squad players? Or like Giannis said, he's hoping that we're going to be bringing in impact players. So what are your thoughts on all of this?
Well, I don't think it's ever acceptable to accept the mediocre, to bob along. We've got ourselves in a good position here. We're just on the shoulder of the playoff positions. And it could be tough, obviously, but, what you need to do, just sit there and say, what if we went for it? What if we went for it? And at the end of the season, finish just outside the playoffs and think, if only we'd have tried a bit harder, you've got to go for it. Obviously, if there was like a massive rift between us and the playoffs at this stage of the season where there's no point spending 50 zillion pounds to win every match if you still won't get to the playoffs, obviously. That's ridiculous economics. Even Calvin Klein wouldn't sanction that. But we're that close that we do have to go for it. And if the right players come along to improve our squad, and we've identified areas where we think, then yes, snap them up and go for it. I think because we need to send out a message of intent that we're going to go for it this season. If we don't go for it this season, we'll be having a bloody good go next season. Because if we could start the season, a few weeks ago or whatever, 6 weeks ago or so, we would be one of the top teams. It was just that, that September really that killed us. Because we had a reasonable start. Then that September, then we've been sort of, chasing our own tails ever since. And just slowly we're making inroads into it. But all the other teams are doing pretty well at the top. And, we're not even, I don't think we're even in the top six current form sides, despite our good run. I think there's seven or eight teams who are actually better than us on current form at the moment. So we do need to do more, but we're that close that you have to go for it, I think.
Okay, very interesting. And Mike, I'm going to go right back to you because this question actually kind of goes with what we're talking about. This is from Justin Glessner. He says, is there a particular player that the co-host would like the club to target in the upcoming window? Mike, I thought of you right away when I saw this. I'm thinking of Jordan Rhodes. I know that the club is probably not going to target Jordan Rhodes, but it kind of goes along with our discussion. What if he was available at the right price? It was probably cost us a good amount of money, but it made fiscal sense because it could potentially take you over the top, bring in someone like Jordan Rhodes. Would you bob along, or would you go out? Would you go for it, Mike?
Okay, well, let me clarify. Bob along is probably the wrong word. It wasn't about mediocrity. It's about what we're doing at the moment and
stay the course. Stay the course.
Yeah, two or three players come in and hope that's good, you know, and improve the squad, and you know, continue as we are, and hopefully get in the playoffs. Or there is the other end of the scale, which is what, you know, do you throw a load of money and do you go and buy someone? Well, I've seen Rhodes linked today with two teams, and you know, Derby and Villa, and I mean, I like, you know, Rhodes, I absolutely love. I would love him to join us, because I do think, you know, he's not like Martin. He is different. You could either have, you know, if Rhodes is, he's going to want to play, and that's going to be the biggest problem, and you would have to change the squad. But I think if you went out and spent another, and he would cost you 8 to 10, or if you could get him on a loan, it would give you two of the best championship strikers around. And, you know, so that would be a statement of intent. But if we were going to throw money at things, we know what we need to do. He is a goalkeeper. He is another classy centre-back. And he is another striker. And you could argue that's conservatively, if you're actually going to buy these players, you're looking at 15 million quid, maybe 17 million quid. And as I say, you know, we're in a position where, God forbid, we lose the next two games and we could end up being too far behind, you know, the playoffs. So you're not going to throw that kind of money. So it's going to be a balancing act. On my sort of workouts, we can spend 7 or 8 million quid if we really wanted to and still be fine. And yeah, you know, we're in a position where we should be going for it. And I'm sure I'm sure the intention is to do that, because you don't want to spend another year in the championship. You want to get to the, you know, Nirvana, which is, you know, the Premier League and all the money that brings. So, but I'm not convinced the club will throw money at it. It'd be a conservative January transfer window. But yeah, Rhodes, bring him on. Yes, because if he joins anyone in January, he'll finish the season with 10 goals in the second half of the season, which is, you can't really ask for much more than that.
Okay, my friend. The minute I saw this this topic, I'm like, I have to ask Mike about Jordan Rhodes, because I know how much you like Jordan Rhodes. David, over to you. I want to get your thoughts about this. Is there a player out there that you feel would be a perfect fit for Fulham? Is there a player that you'd want to see at Fulham right now in the January transfer window?
I don't know, actually. I haven't seen a goalkeeper that I really like. I'm sure there's one around. There's probably one in the Premier League, but they wouldn't come and join us, I don't think. Not a first-choice keeper anyway. Someone mentioned Kasper Schmeichel the other week, in our chat group, but I've always thought of him as a bit of a flapper, actually. So he doesn't have his dad's presence anyway, as far as I'm concerned. So goalkeeper, I couldn't put my finger on it. Centre-back, well, I have to admit, I'd never heard of Kallas before. You know, he popped up at Middlesbrough and on with us. And so I'm sure there's other players out there who could do that job. I'm not struck on the centre-back from Glasgow Rangers, to be absolutely honest with you. You should never believe anything you read in the Daily Mail anyway. They're full of rubbish. So, I don't know. Not many players do make the transition from Scottish football to English football, although so Johansson at the moment is a notable exception, I'd say. Striker-wise, again, it's, you know, yeah, we could sign Jordan Rhodes. I know Mike would be delirious. It would be, you know, the best pre-wedding present you could ever get. But, you know, where do you put him in the team? Middlesbrough signed him and then, you know, he didn't get to play much. And I don't know if Jordan Rhodes would do a better job all round than Martin does, whether his all-round players is good. He's certainly a potent goal scorer. But, you know, you're not going to agree a deal for Chris Martin, perhaps, and sign him and then go and sign Jordan Rhodes as well. And then completely change a winning system. Well, I wouldn't anyway. So there isn't anyone out there that I think, yes, I would like to have at Fulham. Not anyone sensible anyway, that's within budget and would be prepared to come. Of course, you know, we could say Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo. You can name anyone in the best players in the world. I'm sure they'd do a job for us at Fulham. But I'm quite happy with where we are in the players that we do have. It's just obviously plugging those gaps that I think we need to look at. But, you know, Rhodes, I think one day maybe he'll come to Fulham, you know, but it'll be too late. I don't know. Do you think Mike, do you think he would fit into our system at this time, Jordan Rhodes?
No, that's the problem, because, Martin gets loads of abuse from probably about, I was asked at a meeting last week, what do the fans think of Martin? And I said it's probably 65-35 in favour of him. But there's a good number of fans who are not keen on Martin. But, you know, the way we play, I keep describing it, he's the centre hub and everything plays off him. And there's a great diagram from the Ipswich game of all the passes that go through him and Kearney and Johansson and how Martin is the centre of it all. And been trying to describe that to people for so long. You know, he's got 7 goals, which isn't too bad, you know, from the number of games he's played. But it's the other guys are getting the goals, you know, in the midfielders. So where could we improve? Well, you could probably improve, you know, Aluko for all the hard work he does and everything. You know, he could be a foot away from the barn door and he'd miss it. Are there wider players who are more clinical? You know, maybe that's the kind of position we should be looking at. But unfortunately, no, Rhodes, he doesn't quite fit into it. But, you know, as an option, and I'd love him on the bench, you know, to bring on because he knows where the goal is.
Yeah, very interesting. I would love to see Jordan Rhodes. Hey, Mike, right back to you. I'm going to throw out a name of a goalkeeper. Again, this would be more of a short-term solution, but what do you think about Dimitri Konstantopoulos from Middlesbrough? He's not playing right now for them, and he's done a job for them. He's 38 years old, but maybe for a short-term fix, he could potentially be someone that could be very helpful at goalkeeper. I'm just throwing it out there. This is just me.
I saw that. Was there something in the press about that before Christmas?
I'm just mentioning a name that I would like to see.
Oh, right. Okay. You know what? I'm really not keen on if we bring another goalkeeper in. I don't want some OAP.
Okay.
I want someone who's at their peak, playing somewhere, and we've got him because he's a good goalkeeper, and everyone's seeing that he's a good goalkeeper. If we're going to go for it again, because I don't want another OAP goalkeeper for him.
Okay. Okay, I was just, you know, again, I was just thinking of a goalkeeper that, who knows, you know, that could be a fit. But like you said, it would be a very short-term situation. So, because I wouldn't be against bringing a goalkeeper. So that was just me throwing out a name. All right, guys, we have one more topic from the Fulham supporters, and this is a good one. And, Mike, I'll start with you. How badly will we be hurt from Aite and Cabano going to the African Cup of Nations? This is from Matthew Vidiello.
Okay, so are we agreed it's these two are actually going, there's no one else, yeah? Is it just Aite and Cabano?
I believe so. I don't think there's anyone. Yeah. I don't think there's anyone else.
Okay. Well, Cabano, we haven't seen much of him. So are we going to miss him? No. Aite, are we going to miss him like he missed the shot the other day, you know, from, you know, the open goal? Of course we're going to miss Aite because he's playing well. He's been playing in this run that we're having. But it's a chance for either a new player who comes in January or one of the guys, you know, who's not even in a match day squad. So, yes, we're missing. But when you buy these players and you know this tournament is going to be in January, you know, you can't moan about it. And they knew it when they signed them, and we just have to live with it. And, you know, I'm sure Jokanović has got plans in place. But I see it as an opportunity for other players to come in and stake a claim. And we've seen Piazon come in and do okay. You know, there's Hozabad as well. He's still, there is a chance maybe he could get another go. And maybe it will involve a bit of tinkering. Maybe Kearney might go out wide again for a game or two. So, you know, it's a tricky one, but what will be with the African national, you know, with the African Nations Cup. And if you don't want them to go, then you shouldn't sign them.
No, it's a good point. David, what are your thoughts about this situation with these two players going out to the African Cup of Nations?
Well, obviously, Aite is the much bigger miss out of the two because he's been a regular starter and scored goals. Cabano, we've hardly seen. We don't lose them much. And yeah, I mean, I take your point that IT and Aluku have both been a few occasions. But they're an integral part to the way we're playing at the moment. They're providing width and pace. And, you know, with Martin in that sort of central role, everyone feeding off him. And I think Piazon did all right. It was a close call, you know, who was the best player to start off with Piazon or Aiti in that left position. Because I think Piazon acquitted himself quite well, but Aiti obviously just has that little bit more maybe trickery and stuff. Drop in there. Noticed too much there. They say Cabano going, we haven't lost him much. It's only if we get injuries, we need to change things around when, you know, you start to miss these players. So I'm not too worried if these are the only two that are going. Obviously, I don't know who's involved with the African Cup. I mean, I believe doesn't Aluku pay for Nigeria? So they're not involved then, or they've not qualified, or has he not been chosen, or what's the situation with him?
I'm not sure, David. That's a good point. I'm not sure.
They've not qualified. They've not qualified.
There's a result then.
Okay, very good. Okay, let's get into this match, and let's start with the quotes from the manager. Let's start with talking a little bit of what Slavisa Jokanović had to share leading up to this match. And Mike, I'm going to go to you. Here's what Slavisa had to say in... I got these directly from the press conference. These are tweets from the club, so I'm going to share them with you. Quote, we're going to play against third and first in the league. It's a great chance to test ourselves. We go into this match full of confidence after the match versus Ipswich. They have not changed their style after they played us, but we have to be ready for any changes that they make. He's talking about Reading. Quote again, I'm not thinking about May. I'm thinking about tomorrow night and the next step. The next step is ready. Then he's talking about the player that is not going to be available. Quote, only Collis is outside the squad. The rest of my players are available. Quote, it's nice of some managers say we play nice football, but we haven't done our job. We push harder to make ourselves better. Okay, Mike, it doesn't sound like Slavisa really shared too much in these quotes I got off of the phone Twitter account. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, it's the way Jokanović comes along, you know, totally professional, just looking at one game at a time. You know, I get a little bit of criticism for the stats I do, looking ahead, these are what we need. And then some people come back and say, oh, you're looking too far ahead, you just got to look game by game. And fair play to Jokanović. Every, you know, press conference, every post-match, it's the next game. This is the next game. But he does, you know, at the beginning, he does say we are going to play third and first in the league. So, you know, even there, you know, he's looking ahead. These are two key games, and he's quite right. We should be full of confidence. And other managers and other fans, you know, as you can see from the Ipswich fans, were totally enamoured by our play and the type of football we are producing at the moment. Unfortunately, you know, it's not producing the total number of points in the past. But you know, I'm taking a bit of heart from the way Jokanović got Watford playing in the second half of their season, where they blew everyone away. And that, my hope, you know, fingers crossed, is we're going to be able to do that, you know, along with what we were saying earlier, a couple of players coming in just to improve the squad or you know, the team. And the fact that only Callis is injured still, you know, it gives him lots of options. And it's a busy period. But we have seen him recently. He won't make many changes, even when there's games in short supply. But I think tomorrow is the key game. And so, we'll talk about teams later. But I don't think we'll see many changes. But it's interesting, his little comment about Reading haven't changed their style, but we have to be ready for any changes they make. So maybe he's expecting them to do something different. So, I remember doing the pre-match show with you, Russ, again, about the Reading, and I said, you know, it's two similar teams. They're just going to stand there looking at each other, and I was completely wrong. So, you know, let's see what happens. But, you know, Jokanović is very consistent in what he says, and... you know, I wouldn't expect anything different from him. But he is right, though. These next two games are a really good test. of we know we're playing really good football, but can we get the results against two of the top three teams in the league at the moment?
Okay, very good there, Mike. All right, let's move on, and let's go to my stats comparison between the two teams. And David, I'm going to go to you. Let me just read over the stats that I get from WhoScored.com between the two teams in the league. I'll give you the league placing of each one of these categories. Let's start with possession. Reading are currently first with 58.1%. Fulham are second at 57.9%. Aerials one. Reading are 22nd at 18. Fulham are last at 17.3. Shots per game. Reading are 15th at 12.6, and Fulham are first at 16.1. I got that backwards. Passing success, Reading are second at 81.8, and Fulham are first at 82.9. Crosses per game, Reading are tied for 9th with 20, and Fulham are second with 23. Through balls, right now Reading are tied for last with none. Fulham are first with 3 per game. Long balls, Reading are first at 94 per game. Fulham are last with 67 per game. Short passes, Reading are third with 417 short passes per game. And Fulham are first with 496. All right, David, what stands out to you with the stats comparison between these two teams?
Well, for me, in the categories where it really counts, I think Fulham seem to be superior. The one that keeps coming up, which is, perhaps, less important but worrying in other respects, is the aerial side of things, that we are consistently last in the aerial duels. So I'm kind of surprised that we haven't had teams targeted us in the air a little bit more than that, on the basis that we're not very good in the air, supposedly. But literally in everything else, you look at those stats and you'd be thinking, why aren't we top of the table? Because we seem to be, according to the stats at least, the best team in the division. How many of those, sorry, I should have counted, Russ, how many of those categories are we the top team in?
David, I'll take a look right now. Of course you have to ask me when I put the sheet away, but we are currently two. We are the top. We're top in through balls and top in short passes. Passing success as well. So it's three.
What about shots?
I'm sorry, you're right, David. David Holly, right again. It's actually four.
Any more? Can we remember any more? I know we were second in possession, which I think I was surprised that we weren't the first actually in possession, because we've had some real dominating matches recently.
Not Reading is first.
That's the only thing. That's interesting. Two teams who like to have a lot of possession. So that's I can see obviously why. Why when you previewed the first match that you thought it was going to be a close affair. And this is kind of, just what football does to you. You get these stats and you can make these predictions and then it just goes out the window on the day. But I think that, how many other teams have, four top placings and one second? I don't think anyone does, do they, really? We must be, if you was to average out all the groups, apart from the fact of the long balls, which for me don't count. I mean, I think long balls almost should be it should be the other way around. The team that plays the least long balls should be at the top.
Sure.
Long ball football doesn't anyone can hoof the ball football, really, hoof it forwards. It's not necessarily a good attribute, but I think the stats say that we are one of the best teams in the division, and on that basis we are a better team than Reading, for what you just said.
Okay, very good there, David. All right, Mike, over to you. I've got some other information from WhoScored.com. Let's start with where both teams are on the table. Reading are currently third. They have 13 victories, 4 draws, 6 losses. They've scored 33. They've only given up 30 and are currently on 43 points. It's a plus 3 goal differential. Fulham are currently 8th, 9 victories, 9 draws, 5 losses. We've scored 40. We've given up 28, and we're on a plus 12 goal differential and are on 36 points. So there's a 7-point differential between the two teams. Reading strengths, according to WhoScored.com, finishing scoring chances, attacking down the wings, protecting the lead. Their weaknesses, avoiding offside, defending against through ball attacks, defending against skillful players, aerial duels, avoiding fouling in dangerous areas, defending set pieces, and they're very weak at stopping opponents from creating chances. That's good to know. Reading style, possession football, attacking down the right and the left, short passes, playing in their own half, consistent first 11, and they are aggressive. Now, what I also have here, Mike, is a little comparison attacking down the sides where both teams attack down the sides. Reading, left side, 37% of the time, this is where they attack. In the middle, 22%. On the right, 41%. Fulham, on the other hand, their attacking sides, left side is 37%, middle is 28%, and right side is 35%. Action zones, which I also find interesting, where the teams have the ball the most. Action zones, Reading own third, 34% of the time, middle third, 41%, opposition third, 24%. Fulham, on the other hand, own third, 26%, middle third, 44%, opposition third, 30%. All right, Mike, what do you make of the information I just shared with you about Reading from WhoScored.com?
Well, I mean, it's interesting going back to the game where we've been well and truly, but they still caused us a couple of problems. And it's interesting when you look at their stats. I mean, short passing, we're nearly 500 per game, and Reading are just over 400. But it's the long balls. I think you mentioned that they actually lead. They are first in the league for long balls per game. Yeah, and so the problem we have, defensively, even when Callis is playing, is the ball straight down the middle of the pitch, aimed at the two centre backs or in between them, and we seem to struggle for players running onto that. I think David would agree that there's a few times there in games where if there's a ball right down the middle, players run on and it's a bit, they haven't judged it right, or we're playing too high a line. Who knows? But I think we're going to see Reading try and exploit that. And it goes back to your action zones that you mentioned.
Yep.
Reading are top of the league in that sense of playing the game in their own third. And we saw it again at the Cottage where we pressed them. Over a third of the game is played in their third, just outside their box. And then yet we're at the complete opposite end where, we only play 26%. We're bottom of the table. So it's positional wise, territorial wise, we should see a lot of the game in their half. But that's where I think they will then launch the long ball, because that's where they were dangerous against us. So they're the stats. They're the two main stats I'm taking from that, which is, it's telling me how I think the game's going to pan out tomorrow, style-wise. Anyway, they will want to keep the ball just like us, but they keep it a lot deeper and then go for the quicker ball forward.
Okay, very good, Mike. I want to mention a player that did not play the first time the teams played. There are two players, Liam Moore. Their key center back is back for this match, so that's something to be a little worried about. And this player as well, Jan Kerbergan. Striker, he's a player to look out for, and I just want to read this to you because this is a concern of mine going into this match, because I have his characteristics and strengths. There are no weaknesses, according to WhoScored.com, about this player. Through balls, very strong. Aerial duels, very strong. Headed attempts, key passes, finishing, holding on to the ball, direct free kicks, passing, defensive contribution, all strong for this striker. His style of play, likes to play long balls, gets fouled often, indirect set piece threat, plays the ball off the ground often, likes to do layoffs, likes to do flick-ons, likes to tackle. So, Mike, is this the type of player that would concern you going into this match?
It is, and when you see the goals he scores, he's going to. I think that's what's going to cause us problems, and them having Moore back, who's. Yeah, I don't think it's any coincidence that he missed the last game, and we slaughtered him in the end. But so anyone going tomorrow expecting another 5-0 is going to be, I think, sorely disappointed, because they have two of their better players back, and we're going to have to be at our best, because they are not third through being fluking. You see a lot of comments about Brighton and they shouldn't be there. I mean, they're top of the table. They've got 51 points, so they must be doing something right. So And then you've got Reading, who you look at and their games are a lot tighter. They remind me of Brighton of last year. You know, Brighton last year were in the playoffs and they were winning their games 1-0 and that type of thing. And on a knife edge, and that's probably where I see Reading. They can go either way, and at the moment it's the winning way. But I think if any team was going to drop out of the top six, I think it's probably going to be them.
Okay, very good there, Mike. All right, let's really break this thing down. David, over to you. We're going to go back and forth between the two of you. Who are your key players for Fulham in this match against Reading tomorrow?
Well, you know, it's we can pick the old favourites in the middle there, but I think, you know, you've brought up some interesting points there in the fact that they like to play a quick game down the middle, perhaps, Reading, and it could come down to our back four. You know, if we're going to play a long ball football, it doesn't matter how good we are in midfield. If they're going to bypass our midfield, then it's the backs that can, you know, be key to the game. And, you know, I think Slavisa threw us a bit of a curveball there on Monday with the bringing on Sigurdsson and going to three at the back,
yeah,
three centre backs. Which, yeah, so, you know, it begs the question. You know, is this something he's thinking about? Perhaps, and you know, maybe with Callis injured, is he? You know, is it a way to make us stronger at the back to play an extra defender? So if he does, obviously the obvious choice is to lose one of Aiete or Aluka, I guess, because
Right. You've
got the fullbacks to push on. So is that going to be in his mind? Because, you know, Reading do have that danger through the middle, although, you know, according to the stats, they're good on the wings. Or again, do we just worry about our own game? And it was our own game in midfield, especially if you remember back to the match at the Cottage. It was only a few weeks ago. Yep. You know, they couldn't get the ball out from defence. So great, they can play long balls. They couldn't get the ball more than sort of 20 yards from defence. They were just trying to clear it and it was coming straight back to us. They were just losing it. And so the match at the Cottage was definitely won by our midfield being superior to theirs. And perhaps our midfield is superior to theirs, but it's perhaps their ability to sort of, you know, their forwards to chase the long balls down the channels that, you know, where we're in danger. So it's going to be a matter of that our defence needs to be up to the task and our midfield needs to, you know, to win the battle there again, really. So it's kind of two key areas in a way, because you need, you know, one to work with the other. And it's just going to be interesting, as I say, whether Slavisa, you know, puts three centre-backs out. And if he does he go with Ryan Fredericks? Because he's the more obvious
wing-back
person to play on the right than Odoi, who was there. Or would he go back to the kind of the tried and trusted formula and start with, well, we presume, Madeline Ream? though, of course, with Sigurdsson, you know, coming on, scoring a goal, he's going to be knocking on the door to play. But we haven't got anyone there who's massively dominant in the air.
No.
So if they do, you know, try long balls and, you know, high stuff, that could be a concern for me.
Yeah, Dave, that's why I wanted to bring this up, because when I was going through this, I thought of that right away and thought, okay, this is a way that Reading can win this match. So, Mike, over to you. Thoughts on this? And also, David brought up a good point. I was going to bring this up at some point, because I was thinking he did play three at the back, 3-5-2. Could he do this against Reading? I'm not sure, but, you know, it's something to think about. And also, more importantly, how did Fulham win this match? What do they need to do to beat Reading tomorrow?
Okay, I mean, I don't think he'd go to three at the back. I think it was, you know, clearly a tactical change the other day, and but it's there, it's an option. But I don't think he'd do it tomorrow. I think David's right. You know, we've got to do what we did last game, which is, you know, press them from the front with the midfielders, get on their back four, you know, hassle Gunter and Moore and that type of thing, and you know, cause them to make mistakes. And if they're going to pump it long, which is what I expect them to do, you know, they have it for a long time, and then try and use McCleary and Kermagant as well. But play our own game. You know, we're on. Everyone seems to be on form in the top half of the table, but we are on form. We're full of confidence. And, you know, we battered them recently. And so we should just start with exactly the same game plan. If they tweak their way, then Jokanović is smart enough to make changes almost immediately. And,
right.
You know, from speaking to a couple of people, the players are being very well coached tactically, in the sense that if they need to change anything in game, they all know what their jobs are. So the option to free at the back is a nice one to have, and who knows, we might see it, but I don't think it'll be from the start.
Okay, very good, Mike. And what's interesting, and I watched the replay today. The club finally released it. Was how well it worked. Again, we were on the front foot, so probably it wasn't much of a factor with three at the back. But still, they were able to adapt very quickly to that formation, and it didn't seem to bother them too much. So that is good to know. I agree with you. I don't think that he would start with it, but it's good the fact that they have that option. And I did watch Slavisa's interview with Sarah earlier, and it sounds like to me, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, that he's prepared to play a similar game, but he's also prepared, it sounds like, if they decide to change things up. So I'm sure he has a plan B in case they do make changes. So we'll see how things go. All right, Mike, right back to you quickly. Let's go to your starting 11.
Okay, so I think it's going to be, I think Fredericks will come in for Adoree. I think Ream will partner Maddle, because Ream played against them last time. A bit harsh on Sigurdsson because he got a goal, but so be it. Malone at left back, and then it will be the normal front six, if you want to call it that. I don't see any reason to change it fitness-wise from those guys. So, yeah, the main one for me, Fredericks and Ream to keep his position.
Okay, very good. David, your thoughts on the starting 11?
I tend to agree. I think Fredericks will come back in. We haven't needed the 3-5-2 situation so much this year, because we now have genuine fullbacks who can attack and offer that overlapping width that we're lacking, as well as obviously the guys like Aiti and Aluku. Half the reason before was thinking about protecting. It was also to protect the back, the backs in the middle, and to allow Kearney to play central. But we've kind of got around that. We've got Kearney playing central now anyway. We've got McDonald, who does protect, maybe does a better job protecting, the back four or the centre backs. So I don't see an urgent need to make a change. Obviously, I think Ipswich brought on a couple of guys up front, didn't they, in the second half on Monday. So perhaps that's the reason for bringing on an extra centre back. I think it really will be Fredericks to come back, and then it'll be a toss up between Ream and Sigurdsson, who plays as the second centre back, really. But otherwise, as Mike said, I think, really.
Okay, very good. All right. Let's now go right to predictions. Let's go with the Cottage Talk Twitter poll I did earlier. I had 213 votes, a good amount of votes. Win, 61%, guys. Draw, 31%. Loss, 8%. So obviously, confidence is high among the Fulham supporters. I will now go to the Cottage Talk Facebook page, because we have a good amount of predictions. And wow, we have 28 predictions, guys. I'm not going to go through all of them. I'll just go through some of them, just because we'll be here for a while if I go through all of them. Let's start with our co-host, Brendan Cronin. He has 2-2. Colin Forknall, either another 5-0 win or a Fulham draw. Very interesting. Dominic Riley, 3-1 to Fulham. John Fulham Dixon, 2-1 to Fulham. Simon Hanid, 2-2. Yavor Alexiev, 2-2 or 3-3. Ben Reed, 3-1 to Fulham. Ben is being positive. 3-1, I'm sorry, to Fulham. Barry Palmer, 2-0 to Fulham. Tom Colton, 4-2. Let's see. David Kettlehake, I'm a little nervous with Callis out, but with our current form, I'm still optimistic, especially after the beatdown we put on them last time. I'm going 3-1 to the Whites. Brendan Morris, 2-1 to Fulham. And then I'll end it with Guy Rofe at 3-1 to Fulham. And thank you, everyone else, for your predictions. Okay. Mike, I'll start with you. What's your prediction for this match?
Okay, I'm going to go for a Fulham win, 2-1. And I will say, with these two games coming up, this is the game we have to win out of two of them, because I don't think we can catch Brighton, but we can certainly catch Reading. So I want to win, and 2-1, I think it's going to be.
Okay, very good. David, over to you. What's your prediction?
I have to agree with Mike that this is the more important game in terms of catching them. But both are important because we need the points on the board, obviously. But Brighton, yeah, probably are beyond catching, but we could at least have a go in, you know, against them. Yeah, we did very well at Brighton in front of their fans, and we should have got more from the game when we did. So let's not fear Brighton either. But Reading, I fear Reading more, because I think they've really got, you know, a point to prove. Brighton maybe will be thinking they can win again. Reading, you know, are really going to be up for it. So I fear that with Callas missing as well, and their more direct style, that I think if we have an Achilles heel, I think that is probably it. So I fear that it's going to be more like a 2-1 to Reading. So let's hope it's one of these where I'm completely wrong.
Okay, very good, David. David, I've been going back and forth on this. I fear this match. I really do. Out of the two, believe it or not, I fear this one more. I think they're both going to be very difficult, but this is the one that really scares me. When I went through and I looked at the video, and then I checked back and saw all the information from WhoScored.com and how they want to play, and that they could take advantage of our weaknesses based on Kermigan being back, and then you have Liam Moore back as your really your top rate center back for that team. This one scares me, and I can't believe I'm going to do this. David, I'm agreeing with you. I think Fulham are going to lose 2-1. I'm going with you, David. I've been going back and forth on this, but I'm going to agree with you, and I hope I'm wrong too. This is one time I hope that you and I are both wrong.
Yep, hear, hear.
Okay, very good. All right, let's go to final thoughts. Mr. Greg, over to you first.
I'm looking forward to the game tomorrow, and we shouldn't be frightened of anyone, and Brighton is an important game as well, but I'm going to take Jokanovic's view and look at game by game. And so tomorrow's key, absolutely key for us, you know, if we're going to challenge for that top six. So, yeah, bring it on. I'm really looking forward to it.
Mike, I hope your prediction is right, my friend. I really do. Very good final thoughts from you. David, over to you.
Yeah, no, I'd say two very, very difficult matches. Again, you know, a few weeks ago, we talked about the Rotherham game being an important barometer. This is another one. This really, our whole season pivots on this. You know, two defeats here. And you know, we theoretically, we could lose that much ground that it's going to be difficult for us to get back, you know, based on Mike's statistics, totally. Win both games. And then you've got to say, we really are contenders. You know, if we can beat Absolutely. These two teams and beat Reading twice and beat Brighton at home, then we are contenders. Win one of them, you know, still up in the air a little bit. Win both, most certainly. If we lose both, you know, it sounds terrible to say it, but, you know, our season could almost be over if we lose both.
Oh, boy. David, it's a valid point. It's a valid point by both of you. That's why these two matches are kind of pivotal, because if the table goes in a certain direction, we could really be far on the outside looking in, which we don't want to be. So two losses could be bad. We'll have to see how it all plays out. Let's hope that they don't get two losses there. My final thoughts, basically, just to say thank you to you guys. Thank you to all the co-hosts. This has been a wonderful year to do Cottage Talk. You know, we probably will have one final show before the year is over. But I just want to thank all of my co-hosts, including you guys, for doing the show with me. It's been pure joy. So I just want to say thank you to you guys, and thank you to all the co-hosts. Those are my final thoughts there. All right, guys, it is time to wrap up the show. Great show. Great job by both of you. But we do have to go. So for Mike and David, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.